Hello, everyone. Welcome to yet another episode of Contact Lost, the Polish, English-speaking, Warhammer 40k competitive podcast, where we interview people from all over Europe, and I would even say all over the world, about competitive Warhammer, their games, the armies that they have played, the events that they have attended, for your listening pleasure. I am Tomek, known as Tweak, and today I have a very special guest that might have gone a little bit under the radar just because there have been so many events happening on the weekend where he actually won a GT here in Europe I think we need to put some more spotlight on this person, on the army that he plays. So yeah, you've seen the thumbnail, you've seen the title of the episode already, so it's not really a secret that I am interviewing Max Gwiss. Hello, dude.
Hello, wonderful evening.
I know Max from the Tryhard League, the TTS League, and I was actually quite surprised to find out that Max has won the second Austrian GT, so a tournament obviously in Austria, but even more surprised when I heard that he had won it with Death Guard. Max, this episode is basically all about you, all about your, well, amazing feat. But before we get to the event, before we get to your army, tell us something about yourself. How long have you been playing the game? Is Death Guard an army that you have a stronger affiliation for or with, or is it one of many armies that you play? Tell us all about it.
Sure. Let's start at the beginning. I was born on a windy January morning, I guess.
10 hours later.
then stuff happened and I started playing Warhammer. Cool. So that was about 3 years ago. I really got into competitive 40k with the start of, well, basically with the Death Guard release. That was kind of the first major competitive army, going past the 8th edition Chaos Super Suit, here's 4 books and 20 chinky combos. So Death Guard was the first, I would say, mono army that I ever played.
Cool.
But then I realized that flying 20 inches across the board is a whole lot of fun, and I just put Death Guard on the shelf. Mm-hmm. And over the last 2 years, I've basically been playing Elves exclusively, which is kind of where I had my most success and where I'm best known for it. But then 10th edition happened, and Eldari were in a quite solid spot competitively. They were doing okay-ish. Maybe a bit too good. Maybe who knows? I'm not here to judge. Anyway, it was so okay that I decided to take a bit of a break. I've been trying bouncing around a bit across the different factions, like Thousand Suns or Deathwatch, but nothing quite hit the spot. I just wanted my old elves back. And then when the data slit happened, and it still wasn't quite enough to really get the elves back on the radar, I decided to just pick up a new army. And decided to take a look at the old love, the first love, the forgotten love, Death Guard.
That's adorable.
I had sold my army half a year ago, so felt a bit stupid doing this, but it started more of as a painting project, seeing what can I do with this army, because I hadn't read the index before. It was after the data set the first time that I even took a look, because why would you before? Why waste your time? You could just read the Eldari index again, or the Necrons, or what have you.
Yeah, pretty much.
So it came as a bit of a surprise. Just a lot of the my first impressions of the index weren't very positive, to say to put it mildly. It just felt a bit bad. Hmm. It was felt uninspired, no identity. But still, I thought, hey. It's the greatest fun I can have in 40k, just painting a Death Guard army. It's a whole lot of fun. You can use slime and everything you want. You can use all crazy colors.
It's a dirty army, which is great because it allows you for, well, creativity, to say the least.
Yeah, quite honestly, if the painting project didn't go well, I probably would have just left the army again. Yeah. But quite honestly, I just love my army. I adore it. And they got second place at the painting competition, so that's some validation right there. Whole lot of slime and flowers, it's wonderful. But yeah, so anyway, I was just trying to make the best of kind of what I thought was still an underdog. Still, like, it's still Death Guard. Yes, they have a couple of tricks. They're cheaper, but still, it's Death Guard. They're just slow and so on. Mm-hmm. So I just played around a bit. I was starting off with just going by a number of SKUs. Like, I heard Innes talk before, like a month before the data slate, when he went 3-1. Something like that, but that's got
with this wacky list. Like, mm-hmm.
Yeah, with the Hugh Hammer Land Raider, and it sounded wacky, it sounded fun. It's an interesting concept. So that was kind of my starting point. I never really wanted to try the pure vehicle skills they were doing by America, because on WTC they're still running into trouble. Like, WTC is lighter than it previously was. But it's still, you can run into tables where just so annoying to run a vehicle list. It's brutal at times.
Can be, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I kind of just went with a lot of the standard evaluation, I would say. I ran this Hero Hammer with Morty, and then I kind of transitioned over to Plague Marines and Runners. Mm-hmm. Which for like the MSU Plague Marines and Runners, they are really, for me, conceptually the core of the army, I would say. And then I didn't test all that much. I didn't get much experience with the army because I was so focused on painting at the point. I just wanted to get it done. Painted it 3,000 points in 2 weeks. So I was quite happy with that. Uh-huh. But I just didn't expect much out of the event.
Okay. So before we get to the event, I understand that quite possibly you get your practice from the Tryhard League. Is that correct? And could you just maybe expand a little bit on that before we go to the actual event that we're here to discuss?
Yeah, sure. So basically my background is as a TTS player. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I identified myself for the longest while. I've been very successful at this. I've won close to 20 GTs now over the last 1.5 years. So TTS is always quite a bit overshadowed. There's kind of a reason why I'm invited after winning a relatively small GT instead of just after the last, the first dozen GTs or so that I won online.
Yeah, but this does deserve more of a spotlight because people still, I guess, underestimate TTS as a practicing tool. Although the majority of like national teams for the WTC do use it and do get reps through it, and I don't think there is a better possibility to get reps for like a daddy like myself. I have a 9-year-old son who is very absorbing. I can't really go out as much as I would like to, so the TTS League pretty much allows me to play 3 games a week, which I don't really get in like real life. So yeah, I'm with you on this one, definitely.
Yeah. For me, the original reason why I went with TTS and was very hesitant to go to physical events, I only went to my last one in November, I think, mm-hmm. Yeah, in November, is I'm practically deaf. So loud holes are incredibly awkward for me to deal with. Mm-hmm. And I have a pretty fucked up leg. So standing for prolonged periods of time is it's exhausting and just painful. Yeah. So it's quite unfortunate that just the way that physical events have to be run is quite a big problem for me traditionally. And this was the first kind of foreshadowing to the event. It was the first one where I had a really good time. So I'm looking forward to just expanding on this and going to more of them again.
So a small pause here, just in case there are tournament organizers listening to us, because this was an eye-opening thing for me at the LGT a couple of weeks ago, when I actually saw for the first time a tournament that had adjustment for people with movement impairments, for example. So there was a separate table. There was a this lovely, lovely, lovely person. I can't remember his name now, but this lovely, lovely person also playing Death Guard, who was pinned to a wheelchair, and he had a whole table for himself. So all his games were played at that table. He had the room to, like, you know, go around on his wheelchair and so on. And I just find it amazing that tournaments actually do that and adjust more and more to events. So shout out to all the tournament organizers out there. If you do organize a bigger event and you have the room and the capacity to do something like this for people with impairments, you know, to organize a table with a little bit more space around it, maybe a lower table at that for people in wheelchairs or other movement disabilities, then by all means, please do, because this will probably attract more people to the event. Right.
Just to add to this, it's also that if you are suffering from anything of the kind, try to talk to your TO. In my case, it was as simple as just sending a message to Kevin, the organizer, and he set a table quite separate at the edge of the hall, so that I could stand with the back towards the loudest parts of the hall, and it tremendously improved my experience. Mm-hmm. Most TOs out there are just wonderful people, so just try talking to them.
Yeah. Usually the people who organize events are like seasoned tournament organizers. It's not their first rodeo, so if you speak to them, it's highly likely that they will take your opinion into account. And it's just great. I mean, we will be talking more about this during what we now have introduced with Joker. So we have like those hashtag something something Monday, something something Tuesday, Wednesday, and so on, where we talk about different things. So we have I write articles for the hashtag Thoughtful Thursday, which is essentially just that, talking about people with different kinds of disabilities, with you know, people with neurodiversity, different flavors of neurodiversity or neurospiciness, I guess, as Scrivo put it in the last interview. So yeah, more on that on Thursdays. Follow our Facebook page and you will see that articles about playing Warhammer 40k with disabilities, and we will be reaching out to TOs to educate them about adjusting events to that as well. So this was a very, very nice digression. Thank you for that. Now, I think we can move on to the actual event that you attended. Second Austrian GT. Tell us all about it. I understand, I take from what you said that this was probably following the WTC rule set and the WTC terrain. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was technically using the maps for the Alpine Cup next year. Mm-hmm. But essentially, it's like 50% of the tables were using WTC. The others were using, what's it called? Wayland.
Wayland.
Exactly. That terrain. But it's basically WTC, just slightly differently organized. So okay. For all intents and purposes, that's WTC, yeah.
All right. I have to pause here. Sorry, Max, just for a second. Because it's funny that you mentioned Weyland Yutani. I wanted to mention them as well, and there's a good reason for that. It's because Weyland Yutani have become our sponsor, and we haven't like made a post about it yet on Facebook and so on. So this is the first time I'm mentioning it. But the sponsorship is that they have given us a special code and an affiliation link. And if you follow this affiliation link and use the code that you can find below in the description of this video, then you can get a 5% discount on their terrain, which you have just mentioned. And I couldn't have dreamed of a better transition. So thank you for that. Thank you for bringing them up. And yeah, to our listeners, do use the link if you want some amazing terrain. If you've seen Wargames Live doing the coverage of the WTC this year and you enjoyed the terrain that was on the tables at that event, that was Weyland Yutani basically, and that was some amazing, beautiful, elegant terrain for your tables. So what wonderful way to plug something. Thank you, Max. Coming back to the event, that was the last digression, I promise.
No worries.
So we know the terrain, we know the rule set. How about the amount of people that were at the event? Was it like you mentioned it was small. So how small is small?
I think we started with 40 on the first day. Mm-hmm. I think the final number was either 30, 32, something like that. Just after, you know, the usual day one drops. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like normally what we get in our neck of the woods. It's kind of for like central Europe. It can be a bit deceiving because It's relatively small, but for example, it had basically the entirety of the WTC team there. So it's quite a stacked field.
It seemed like a shark tank of an event. So
it can always be a bit deceiving when you are when comparing them to many of the other events. It's just generally hard at times to compare events across. Like, I personally just don't pay too much attention to many of the events where I don't know terrain layouts or who's attending, just because it can be so hard to actually try to differentiate what is really just a bit of a softer meta, I would say.
For talking about the meta and this event in particular, you've decided to go with Death Guard, but were there any matchups or armies that you were dreading that you, for example, didn't want to see on the table or meet in person?
I started from the perspective of thinking of myself as the underdog, so I was scared of everything.
Okay.
it's honestly the situation where I'm happiest. When I was playing Eldari for a year, basically having a 96% win rate and so on, I was still scared of every other army out there. Overconfidence is not a vice to indulge in. It's also when I'm most successful. It's the matchups where I think I get this. This is the deep green. These are the matchups where did I screw up. So me just going in and just being scared of everyone, that's fine. I was looking at the list before, and out of the 42, I identified 6 as being so weird that they just didn't have a chance of winning. Mm-hmm. I thought the 36 actually were, just looking at them, those were lists that I thought could win an event, either because they were just standard matter, like LGT, GSM, Eldari variants, and so on, or just because they were finely crafted. And I thought that that's a good idea here. That's something so just looking at this, I just didn't have high hopes. Got paired into a pretty standard LGT CSM list in round one. Mm-hmm. And I thought, let's take a look at this one.
All right, so let's take a look at this one. But before we do, tell us what was in your list. I mean, again, some people, if they're interested, especially Death Guard fans, they probably already know, because you are also part of the Nurgle's Mansion Discord server. So probably this was broadly discussed over there. However, to the not knowing people, not aware or not really interested before, tell us what was your list archetype, what did you bring, and what was it supposed to do?
Right, so it's basically 3 separate pieces kind of being combined. The most uncontroversial and most standard one is 3 plate bus crawlers. Mm-hmm. You know, it's at this point, indirect is pretty good still in the game. And it is especially good for Death Guard. Let me just maybe get the overview right before we dive deeper into the different parts. So we just have the 3 plate bus crawlers. Then we have 3 rhinos filled with 6x5 plague marines. They're equipped with 3 heavy weapons, 2x plasma guns, and a blood launcher.
Yeah, so to those who don't know, like, what the heavy weapon it means in this context, it's basically a power fist. Strength 8, AP 2, damage 2.
Yeah, power fist weapon skill 4, because of reasons. Mm-hmm. Three of the 6 plague marine squads did have a biologus putrefier. For everyone that doesn't know, it's the one that gives the unit lethal hits 5, and it also provides a free grenade strat once per game, which doesn't sound impressive, but we will come back to this and how useful it actually is later on.
Sweet.
So we have the plague bush crawlers, we have the rhinos, and then to tie it all together and give the list some flexibility, we have a pretty hefty terminator score. We have 2x3 death shards. We have a lot of virulence, which is the guy that buffs the indirect weapons, and the flamer one, and a lot of contagion, the guy with the big axe, and Typhus.
Reloads to hit in combat with the Lord of Contagion.
And we watched the wound with a lot of Violets with the Flamers, yeah.
Yeah, and I see plus one strength, plus one attack on the Lord of Contagion. So five attacks, rerolling, strength 9, AP 2, damage 3?
It actually goes up to 6, yeah, 6 attacks.
6 attacks with the buff, of course.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yeah. Yeah, 6 attacks, strength 9, minus 2, 3 damage. It's solid.
Yeah.
It's not quite as impressive as you will find in other books, but that's true for most of the things generally.
Correct.
So the basic strategy with this is that I wanted to have a list that demands bad traits. I was looking more specifically at Chaos Space Marines and what they were running, which still features some of the smaller squads, like the 5 Chosen, but even the five Chosen will have a Lord attached, which brings their total price point up to, what was it, 185, I think. Mm-hmm. So if you are confronted by an 80 point Plaguemen squad, it's already you are trading down massively. It's when I was looking at the Chaos Space Marine lists, I found that didn't have too many good tools to reliably deal with Rhinos and Plague Marines. With Plague Marines in a weird spot, because they're not really doing that much, but they're also only 80 points.
Yeah,
they're not durable, but they're still 16-point Marine bodies. It's a unit that is at this point is so cheap that you have a hard time not getting some value out of them. So that was kind of my starting point here. I wanted to have Rhinos that sit on objectives. That's the opening move in all of the games. Mm-hmm. I mortar a bit of stuff. You know, take out those warp talents, for example. Just make it even harder to get those favorable traits, and put those Rhinos on the objectives. Move them forward.
So, quick question, because if you listen to the Disgustingly Resilient podcast with Aiden Smalley. Aiden is a very, 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 very strong advocate of playing 3 crawlers together with Morty for ignore basically everything aura. You didn't bring Morty. So how efficient were the plague with crawlers in your games? Because with all those negative modifiers and so on, I think the output from crawlers is dubious. So yeah, how did you feel about them?
I don't really bring Plague Burst Crawlers to do tremendous amounts of damage with the mortars.
Okay.
That's I think really where the where I'm always a bit confused when I see Morty as a buff piece for Plague Burst Crawlers, because he's really expensive. And yep. I initially absolutely hated it when I put it on the table for the first time. The trying to keep 3 Plague Burst Crawlers in the range of Morty, while also doing something useful with Morty and all the Plague Burst Crawlers, it was just too much for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know the feeling.
Yeah. So, yes, they're hitting on 4s. Arm of Contempt doesn't even matter particularly much. It's really more like hitting on 4s. That's fine. Because what they do is that they provide indirect. Once you have indirect, it doesn't pass an early point in the damage output. Once you have indirect, it doesn't really matter whether you have more indirect, because what it already does, it pushes all the good targets off the table. If you think about the Eldari matchup, for example, you can't start Warp Spiders on the table against 3 Plague Burst Crawlers. It doesn't really matter whether they potentially whiff against them. You just can't risk going second and losing the warp spiders early. Same with Shadow Spectres and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. So basically, the moment you include the Plague Burst Crawlers, your opponent has to start them off the board. So they've already done part of their job. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is pretty much it. It's also just the pressure. Like, yes, there were Devastators, there were Guard Artillery Parks, but most of the time, what indirect really does, it forces aggression. Nobody likes getting shot at. If you see your opponent just hiding behind a wall, and you lose a unit, or you lose 4 infiltrators, for example, it is weirdly enough to just make highly experienced players make some really stupid decisions just because they don't want to get shot anymore.
Yeah.
It's what I ran Night Spinners in 9th edition in the Mild Irish. They really weren't efficient. But what they were useful for is bait. It's the tradition. It's really the reason why I kept them in there. They didn't do a whole lot in my games. But if I ever had a Night Spinner just peek out of a corner, my opponent went through. They went all in on it. They couldn't help themselves because it's a Night Spinner. You can see it now. You can shoot it. You can do something about this. And the Plague Burst Squad is in a similar position. The entropy cannons, for example, they just don't do anything. Oh, we're gonna come back to the entropy cannons in a second. But speaking about the mortars right now, like the mortars didn't really kill too much. I mostly just used them for the psychological pressure. And also because I have a fetish for background screening, and having an artillery piece that does something while it stands around, that's great. That's value.
Agreed.
So maybe let's talk about the decision not to bring Morty while we're at this. Mm-hmm. So Morty is useful for this. He's a good buff piece. He's not a fantastic force multiplier because he is really expensive and he needs to go out and get some value. So you can't really afford to do this past turn one, maybe turn two, where you sit back and you shoot your mortars. I guess in a pure vehicle screw, you could do that easier. But for like, let's call it a more balanced approach, he kind of has to go forward and do something.
Yeah, so it's one of the extremes, right? Because it's either sit back and hide, and then on turn three, you realize that you should have started moving with Morty a turn ago because he's now so far back that he can get to anything. Or you go to the other extreme where you take him, the crawlers, whatever else he's supposed to buff, and you go forward. But then you also find out that he doesn't do that much in combat. So there's more.
It's a sad reality. It's a gigantic guy with a gigantic scythe, the size of a tank. He should do a bit more than 5 attacks with damage 4.
Yep.
It's the amount of times I just sent him in to do the most basic task and he just whiffed. He just rolled 2 ones on the first try and it's just, what's the point, Morty? Why are you even trying?
No. Well, at least he has the grenade keyword, so there's that. I guess.
There's that. He can do some damage if he spends CP. That's
exactly.
Nah, but the thing is, I still think Morty is a good model. I think Morty provides something that is... he provides enough between all of his different roles. He's like a hybrid between force multiplier, tanky guy, does a bit of damage. And he's cheap. It's really 25 points. It's the price of 2 Plague Burst Squads. But I felt I just didn't have the experience to get the playstyle right. Because like you said, he needs to get the timing just right where he gets forward. Like, you can't have him seen early, and if your opponents get some chip damage on him and he goes forward with 10 wounds, he's not going to be that much of a threat. 10 wound Morty is pretty easy to deal with. So you need to hide him, but you also need to put him into a position where he can go forward at that correct time to absorb that fire and demand to be taken care of. So getting this timing right, I just couldn't do it. I felt like I just needed an additional dozen test games where I just focus on multi-positioning. I thought that was just a bit too much to ask, so I just... and I played an RTG the weekend before, and Morty, besides riffing horrifically, he was ignored in the game, which is kind of, unfortunately, the correct choice. What to do about Morty, you just don't bother doing anything about Morty. You just ram a rhino into him and he's going to be stuck there for like 2, 3, 5 phases. It's a bit sad. But yeah, it was kind of a combination. I couldn't quite get the playstyle right. I couldn't move the model in just the way that I needed to get the most value out of him. That was pretty much my problem. So I thought, why not make this a virtue? Why not take what I have, just cut Morty, get 2 Plague Burst Squads in, That was pretty much the thinking here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And I agree. In my games, Morty seems sometimes more like an anchor that is holding you back rather than something that contributes to your army's success. So I'm actually considering dropping him as well. And looking at your list, looking at the army composition, it seems to have everything that it needs to be successful, even without Morty. So, yeah, I love the list building. I love with what you went with. So, do we want to jump into your game one against Chaos Space Marines, or is there something more about the list that you would like to unveil?
There was something more. Just a quick word on Entropy Cannons, because there's... It seems to be a bit of a religious civil war in the Death Guard community between entropy cannons and spitters. Nobody seems to respect the entropy cannon.
It's for the rage, right?
Rightfully so. Entropy cannons really suck. They're really bad. They're just horrible. I hate the fact that they're 2400s. I hate how unreliable they are. But it's also quite hard to find a gun that looks threatening. You tell your opponent, it's strength 10 with lethal hits, I have a minus 1 toughness aura, it's d6 plus 1 damage, it's a big gun, right? It's the only real anti-tank gun I have in my list. So, and I think when you find competent players, we're all just so well trained to do specific things, like for example, measure angles, measure threat ranges for ranged weapons and so on. You kind of, it's very hard to just mentally flip the switch and just say, yeah, this gun sucks. Yes, it can potentially shoot me, but it's not going to do a whole lot. It's it just has the spike potential, but opponents respect it far, far more than they really should. So that was pretty much the thinking here. And it did the job across all my games I played so far. It's the moment I didn't have an entropy cannon in my list, my opponent just played vastly more aggressive into me. They fully realized that I just don't quite have the threat range to punish them. But the moment you include an entropy cannon and you tell them, yes, I can move 10 inches and then I can shoot you here, they start respecting it. It keeps them honest. It keeps me safe. It keeps them honest. We have a great game.
That's interesting, because it seems like what you've said about the crawlers earlier and now with the entropy cannons, the crawlers seem to be winning games thanks to like all this smoke and mirrors trickery, not the damage output itself. So that's a really interesting aspect that you brought up.
Yeah, I think we're going to come to this in the games itself, that a lot of 40K is really all about shaping a game. From the outset, you kind of have to set the expectations for your opponent. So maybe they just jump straight into game one. It was supply drop, so the one where Alpha with Alpha and Omega, where two objectives disappear, on Hammer and Anvil. But against a pretty standard CSM LGT list, some minimal differences. The most important one, that he had two combined 10-man squads of Chosen. So, I get lucky, rolled one roll off, which isn't particularly impressive when it comes to like the mission itself. Supply drop is pretty solid going second. Hammer and Anvil, pretty dense in WTC. So I didn't really shoot much in turn one. My mortars were quite successful, took out 4 warp talents, which is about what they do. But we're going to come to the signature opening move of this entire list. I take my 3 runners and I drive them on the objectives, and I pass the clock, which is a true power move. It's really exciting. I wrote an article today for my blog, The Strategic Owl, where I realized that like the first 6 pictures or so were just pictures of rhinos perhaps sitting behind walls, and it's this is kind of how the list, what the list does. Okay, I can't make it more exciting. but the good news is that this really is the opening move. This is just the boards in the opponent's court now. There's rhinos here on the objectives. The plague bush court. You just lost a small utility squad. Congratulations. You have to do something about this now. And the good news really here is the list is wonderfully exciting. It's just this one standard opening move that you do, where you drive the rhinos forward into a position where they can either stage or beat an objective. But past that, what happens now? This really depends on your opponent. How does he want to react? Does he respect the enter mechanics? Maybe he's just a maverick and just rushes forward. But maybe he tries to deny. Maybe he, like in the, what kind of happens in the Chaos Space Marine matchup is you often end up with a rhino wall where you drive a rhino to this side of the wall. Then the Chaos Space Marine player drives a rhino to the other side of the wall. And you contest the objective and it's wonderfully exciting. My opponent, he had two times two blitz in deep strike. He had an undivided force from the deep strike, so he didn't really have the tools to deal with the rhinos behind walls, which is kind of a theme with TSM that I've found, is that they're just not doing that much to the rhinos. They just don't have these, like when I said before, bad trades. They're kind of forced to do to just trade downward into rhinos. You just have to begrudgingly take your five chosen with a lord and just put them into a rhino, and it's stupid and you don't like it and you hate everything about it, but you still have to do it. So that was largely it. Like the whole game is basically just this devolution of the game state where he just has to take bad trade after bad trade after bad trade until there's nothing left but glory for the Death Guard.
So it's also, I think, worth mentioning who you were playing against, because I see in Tyranny Keeper that it was Dominic, right?
Yeah, Dominic, yeah.
So is he the captain of Team Austria? Is that correct?
I wasn't involved so far in the scene. I'm not sure whether it was the captain.
I just Googled him really quickly and I found a page where it says that he either is or was a captain of Team Austria. So quite an exciting matchup, to be perfectly honest, and definitely a skilled player that knows what he is doing. So
nice. Yeah, also a perfectly lovely guy. Really great game. It was good fun.
So what did you focus your Plague Riscrawlers on? Because I see he had some Chosen, he had some Warp Talons, he had some Nurglings, as you said, Oblitz and the Forge Fiends in the back. So Oblitz off the table, Forge Fiends in the back. So how did you prioritize your targets?
Yeah, what you focus on here is Warp Talons, always Warp Talons first, because they're kind of the compromise between a utility squad and actual dangerous. Because like in this matchup, you pick minus one weapon skill, minus ballistic skill as your contagion, because yes, they do have a number of ways to get around that between Nurgle and the just undivided keywords and strat. But what you do is you open up, areas where they can fail. The moment you'd have the minus one weapon skill, potentially a minus one to hit from the Nurglings, in combination there. For example, Warp Talons, they just don't even reliably pick up a Plague Marine squad anymore. They actually have a fairly significant chance to just kill like the two unimportant guys and then get picked up by the three melee weapons on the return. And the reality is that you just don't need the extra save or the extra or the minus one OC. That's just a waste. You don't need this. So just having the option to just force your opponent to, for example, constantly use the free strat from the Lord to use it on reward everything instead of, for example, saving it for Arm of Contempt. That's just pure money. That's just wonderful. So what the Plague Riscrawlers do is you go Warp Talons and then you just take a look. If, for example, they have Nurglings that are within 6 inches of the center, and there's no better target, just shoot the Nurglings. Always just try to start removing stuff. You can also, if it's a slow game, you can also just start getting rid of cultists, for example, that try to hold the backfield. Maybe you get towards the position where the CSM player feels forced to use the Nurgle strat. That could be something. Because they don't want to deal with potentially battle shock tests in the future. Yeah, that might happen. It's kind of you're opportunistic. The important part is, again, that you just apply pressure. You just pick up these small utility squads. And what are they going to do now to score the teleport homers? They can't really use the ocean to do it. They can't put a force wind forward. So again, you just force them to, for example, put a rhino forward and what have you. So it's really just, plague push quarters are great. Just pick up these small squads that you also have to be realistic about this. They kill like four marine bodies or so by turn. So just don't aim for anything that is fantastically above that.
Yeah.
Kill the warp patterns.
I know exactly what you mean. I played a game on TTS last week when I was playing against Tyranids, and I thought that it was a brilliant idea to target down the Biovore quickly to deny them scoring secondaries. Three Primal Scrawlers with Morty shooting into one Biovore didn't kill it. So don't count on like high damage outputs, but if you're shooting into like one wound chaff units like cultists or something like that, then yeah, probably it'll be successful. But I have to ask about one thing. Have the battle shocks ever come to play? Have you actually benefited from that? Because I keep to forget that they actually make units take battle shock test.
It is relevant against Necrons. Like, it would be really cool against Warriors, but the whole game plan against Necron Warriors is to not shoot them at all and just put stuff into them and not hurt them in any way, shape, or form. So it's kind of a bit wasted there. It could theoretically be useful against Custodes, I think.
Oh, yeah.
But why on earth would you set yourself up in a way that you haven't... Like, when you see, like, a Trajan squad or... say, Blades Champion plus 5 Wardens or so on an objective. Like, you don't hope that they suddenly just fail a 5-up save on the battle shock test. You set yourself up to play around to fight first in the first place. So, it's kind of a thing that I might have potentially forgotten all event and it didn't hurt, it didn't come to play.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. I keep forgetting about it as well because it used to be so insignificant. Now, maybe a little bit more, but still, it's a negligible kind of ability, so it seems.
There is something about Armor of Contempt factions where it can be useful, but kind of the problem is then you have to proactively shoot your mortars. Like, indirect is just really good because it just gives you this extra safety net of... That one unit that survives in one wound, and you just don't have any other way to do it, shoot a mortar at it. Have some fun. You don't want to shoot the mortar first. You don't. That would be bad. So just shooting it first on a unit that maybe your other units pick up anyway, that is just a hard sell to me. So yeah, I'm just probably just gonna keep forgetting it until it becomes relevant, and then. Beat myself up over it later.
Yeah, sure. All right. So how did that game one go? What was the final score, and how did you read that score? Reach that score.
Yeah, like it ended up in a 19-1, but it's just quite a passive game where you just force them to fully commit into you, and then, for example, the death shots with a lot of change drop down, rapid ingress, and they just pick up 10 chosen and you call it a day. It's wonderful.
Okay. What secondaries did you choose? Because it's always a struggle for me to reliably choose the secondaries. You could go with fixed, but it reveals to your opponent what you're going to do. You could go with tactical, but then there is a bit of randomness. But again, it gives you back CP. So which one did you go for?
Generally, I go for fixed. I went for fixed in this one. I always go for teleport homer because when you go fixed, you go teleport homers because it's the one you always do. It's a law. It's the law. But the second one is the interesting one, typically. On supply drop, it's basically a storm hostile. Like storm hostile, like Dominic did a good job of playing around it on like turn one, where he just contested the objective. But the problem is that overall he scored 0 points in primary, so which is kind of indicative of the dilemma you are when you're facing Storm Hostile. Like, yes, you are maybe denying points and so on. I think and your opponent ends up with a 4 and 8. But at the same time, you're also not putting yourself into the position where you are trying to actively hold an objective. And on missions like supply drop, that's really a death sentence. Like, if you're not trying to from the get-go start to play for the primary aggressively, well, suddenly an objective is gone. Suddenly the second objective is gone. And, well, that's really the end of the story. And you're sitting there with your zero primary and thought, mate, maybe I should not have tried to play around Storm Hostel and just bunkered down on this objective. So that's kind of a theme. Whenever there is a contested primary, I go with Storm Hostile. It's pretty solid in these circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Good. Okay, so no tacticals whatsoever.
I did go tactical twice this event, and twice it was a mistake. I don't even own tactical cards. My opponents were just nice enough to let me use the
other deck, yeah.
So, that was very nice of them. I regretted my decision almost immediately. We're going to come to this too in round 5. But let me just say, it features capture enemy outpost in turn 1. which is kind of the classic situation where everyone just reconsiders their choice of going with tactical.
Yep.
That's kind of the problem. Yeah, cool. But yeah, for round 2, let's move on with our lives. Mm-hmm. Round 2, we had the first Elder, because it's kind of what you expect when you win a game. You go on the Elder track.
Yeah, especially of the with a score like that. Mm.
So pretty much this was a maybe a bit of a weirder one, perhaps. It was an Inari one. So it features your brain. And the reason why I went Inari, we're triple Ravager. Which is, I think, still a defensible decision. I still think Ravagers are solid for the price point. Just to get that amount of Bright Lances in. Like, in total, I think he had started with 13 Bright Lancers and a brick of 10 Wraith Guard. Mm-hmm. Which is one of the situations where I was really, really glad I did not bring Morty, because he would not have had a good game.
Yeah, probably.
Like, trying to circumvent that minefield of devastating wounds and just all of the rewards and Bright Lances, it's just not fun for him. This was on Ritual. Ritual is kind of an interesting one to go against as an Eldari, because I would really prefer to go with one of the aggressive ones, like Supply Drop, like Vital Ground. Because the way that this list conceptually beats Eldar is that it sits really aggressively in Rhinos behind walls and forces bad trades, because your opponent has to deal with Rhinos now. Which Knight's Spinners can't do, so they have to put something forward. And Elder these days are actually quite point-starved. Like, once you have a Wraith Guard, and once you have the Incarn, and once you have your 2 and 3 Night Spinners, there's just not that much left over. So each time you can just get them to take that unit of Shadow Spectres and just use them exclusively to deny you a primary point by sitting opposite a Rhino. But that's gold. That's pure gold. So this is kind of what the whole strategy is designed around. I'm whittling the Plague Burst Quarters. They're good enough to eventually get through a unit of like Warp Spiders. They can do this. And you just bleed them dry of these small assets. You put your Rhinos behind walls, and you just wait for the magic to happen. In this case, he went first, and he tried to go for an Alpha Strike, using all of the 2 Warwalkers and all of the Ravagers to go forward and try to go after a combination of Rhinos and PBCs, which is not a god-awful idea. The only problem was that he went too far forward. He dug too deep. And he went into what I call the grenade range. It's just this wonderful, wonderful part of the board where your Rhino can move 12 inches forward. You guys disembark 3 inches, and the nades start flying. Which I was alluding to before earlier. Everyone's constantly, when they play for Death Guard for the first time, like a list like this, you just tell them, yes, my guy can, once per game, my guy can do 3 grenades. It's in addition to other grenades that he paid for. And it's just, Wait, grenades, that's 6 dice, 4 plus mortal wound, 1 mortal wound. Yeah, okay. So, and they immediately forget it. It exists. It does something. But it starts working the magic when you pay 1 CP. Here's my first grenades. Then I will use my 3 grenades. Okay. Then I will use my 3 grenades. Then I will use my 3 grenades. And it's just wonderful. That look on their faces. It's just marvelous. So this is kind of not what happened quite here in this scenario. This is the one game where the entropy cannons had one good turn. Basically, he whiffed because he just overestimated the output they had into PVCs. Mm-hmm. Because having a 4-up in cover is actually still, it goes up and down. It's a 4-up save. So he went for too many targets. He dug too deep. He was too greedy. And in return, kind of just 2 Ravagers. And then I got 1 unit of Plague Marines into took out 2 War Walkers. And yeah, he didn't have a good opportunity to get the Incarn in turn 1, which I was incredibly sad about. Because the one wonderful thing about this matchup is that the more you really want the Incarn aggressively teleported turn 1. I had one game recently where I deployed 2 Fall Blightspawn outside of the Rhinos, just so that the Night Spinners could shoot the stupid Fall Blightspawn. Mm-hmm. Just so the Incarn has a really good, really tasty opportunity to teleport right over there. The reason for this is because I set up in a way that wherever the Incarn teleports on my turn 1, there will always be another Rhino that can come forward and double grenade the Incarn. Getting those like 6 mortal wounds, that's already halfway there to just taking out the Incarn, which is so important because the Incarn is one of those tools where the Eldari can really contest an objective and have something dangerous that can play the objectives. There's just not much else that really does the same job as an Incarn. Both in the roster and generally, the Incarn is a very unique model at this point. So unfortunately, he kind of didn't have a good opportunity to teleport the Incarn. What can you do? He appears turn 2 and gets promptly naded. It's also one of the reasons why Typhus is in the list. Typhus has a tendency to roll 1s along his ability. He likes to do that. But the important bit is it gives you that extra bit of security to just get some immortals. If you can get 2 grenades and Typhus into the Incarn, you should be very, very close to killing it. But yeah, this game overall, it wasn't that exciting, partially because my opponent just went aggressive into me, which is just not quite what you really should do as an Elder player here. Not to give anything away, but if you have superior mobility, the thing you don't do is get closer to the slow opponent and into his threat ranges. So that was a bit of a one-sided affair in the end. Ended up 19-1 because he drew a couple of good cards. But yeah, for myself, in terms of secondary, it's just teleport homers and cleanse. Because cleanse is solid enough on ritual. It's a good one.
Okay, fantastic. So let's move on with the next matchup. You were playing, I guess, Pius Amon. Is that correct? I think so. That's your third game, from what I see. And you were playing into Tyranids.
Yeah, Tyranids is a tricky matchup for Death Guard because it kind of showcases one of the problems you tend to have, which is high toughness is not that great to deal with. Like on paper, if you look at my list on paper, besides the entropy cannons, of course, never underestimate the entropy cannons. They do great, wonderful things. Besides them, I don't have much in that list that really looks threatening. So, of course, what he did is he respected the entropy cannons and hit from the entropy cannons. Okay, I can live with this. But where the army really does damage is against high toughness, is when you can create the situations where Say they play three Maliceptors. Three Maliceptors march proudly forward because they underestimate your damage output. And you go for the old intern, where basically all of the Rhinos open the floodgates and Plague Marines jump everywhere, grenades start flying, you get your Death Rats to drop down or Rapid Grass drop down, and you just go for this. The list is surprisingly capable just between the sheer amount of lethal hit shots you have. Everyone just underestimates, for example, the amount of damage two shots you get from the you get from 30 Plague Marines. It's every squad has four shots with plasma guns within 12 inches and two shots with the blight launcher. So across six squads, that's already 36 damage two shots. Then you get the three Biologos with the D6 shots. Just a lot of lethals flying around. Mm-hmm. And then you get into melee. You have it kind of all adds up. None of the activations themselves look impressive, but you can, if the opportunity presents itself, go for a hard turn where you try to focus on focus on the front line. You don't really have good answers into Exocrines. There's not much you can do. Your opponent plays defensively with an Exocrine. He plays defensively with an Exocrine and is going to shoot. And there's just isn't much to do about this. But the lucky thing in this situation was that we were playing Purge the Foe. And this is also really where I was very happy to bring Triple Plague Burst Quarters. Because, like your game, Plague Burst Quarters have a tendency to not immediately outright kill a Biovore or Pyrovore, or any of those profiles. But what did it do? They threaten it. The opponent just can't sit back and think, hey, I am going to just try to match him on kill more. Because if I just sit behind my wall and shoot a Pyrovore each turn, then, well, you can't give up kill more twice in this mission before it becomes a really tight game. Mm-hmm. So him going first, and also me having the Plague Burst Quarters with indirect advantage, that just meant that he had to start getting much more aggressive than he would be comfortable with. It was also the last day of the game, so we were both quite all right with the decision to have a, I guess, more aggressive game, because my god, it's been a long day and so on. Can't we just kill some stuff? Which is also the correct choice for Tyranids. Tyranids really need to do this in this game. You have to go for this, at least in this mission, you just go for the board control, for the aggressive game state. Mm-hmm. But yeah, what really showed in this game is that Tyranids, once you apply -1 weapon ballistic skill, they really struggle with their output, even in a list that is kind of semi-durable, like mine is. So what happened previously in my Nids games is that once I do go all in, it just Nids don't have the reliable damage output to just wipe everything. This is not 12 crisis units in Tau on turn 3, where if I show 30 Plague Marines, those 30 Plague Marines are dead. They're gone. In the Nid scenario, there's just, yeah, he's going to kill like 10, 15. What do I care? They're cheap. They're expendable. Because what happens afterwards? After you remove the Maliceptors and the Exocrine sit defensively at the back, you just run away behind a wall in your Rhino and live a safe life. Because you just don't need to care about the Exocrines. So I think when it comes to the damage output in this scenario, for example, the list has enough to deal with the frontline monsters that I need to deal with so I can live safely behind a wall in the Rhino. I don't need to have an answer to all of the backline stuff.
That's good. What secondaries did you pick again?
This was just a simple engage plus the Deploy Teleport Homer. Engage because there was a very nice crate in a table quarter that we were both not interested in. He picked exactly the same. He put a Lurker behind the boxes. I put a bunch of Nurkers behind the box. It's 10 honest points. Mm-hmm. You don't need to get fancy all the time.
Yeah, true.
Sometimes a lot of the scores with my Death Guard there are just particularly impressive. It's like, I'm scoring a lot of 80s, for example. it doesn't matter when your opponents score 30 or 40 points. That's the beauty of 20-hour scoring.
So I need to ask a question. Would this army be as potent if it hadn't been for the three units of Nurglings?
I think you need at least two. So, yeah. There's what the Nurglings do really depends on the matchups. There are some matchups where they don't really do much, but for every matchup where they don't do anything, you also have, for example, Botan with six touch towers. If you don't have a single unit of Nurglings that can actually block the scout move, you're playing from the back foot from the start. Trying to just play around such a towers that just sit in a corner and shoot you, because they just move 19 on turn one, or is it 21? I can't remember. Something in that ballpark. It's not fun. Similarly, in the, for example, any melee matchup, orcs. My god, are orcs pitiful into death guard. Pitiful, I say. Just the minus two to hit from just a random unit of Nurgle, they just can't do anything. So in the melee matchups, they're fantastic for the minus one to hit ability. And just generally, you need someone that does homers. Yes, your Rhinos can do homers, but you also just WTC has a whole bunch of maps where you have this 6-inch circle of death in the center.
Yep.
And you just need someone who is happy being shot. And the Nurglings look happy. They're jolly little fellas. They don't mind getting blasted with smithereens. But I don't mind. They don't mind. We're all happy. Mm-hmm. So it's expandable. Yeah. I think they're less useful than I originally thought. Where I started with this with like six squads. You don't need six. You don't need five. You don't need four. But three is pretty much where I think. I don't want to go below, which is quite awkward for teams because you're competing with CSM for like the demon spots.
I mean, exactly.
Nobody wants to play demons right now, so that's not a problem. But you're competing with scale space marines, where everyone wants to play. So tricky stuff.
Okay. All right. So should we move on to the next game then?
Yes. Which is the weird one that
against Sebastian Kipling.
Yep, Sebastian, another of the team members. He played a triple Void Raven plus MSU Dukaru list, which is on the. He ended up going 4-1 with some very impressive results, largely because people just see a Void Raven bomb and think, oh, it's a meme list. Look, they did bring three aircraft. What a fool. The thing is, World Raven Bombers, it's actually a legit datasheet, and it's probably the one aircraft that I think is vastly underestimated. Like, that thing before we were to hit, it does put out a lot of heart, and you underestimate it at your own peril.
Yeah, I mean, we did do an interview with James Grover from Gunhammer before the LGT, and we were doing the top seven data sheets that, you know, people should pay attention to after the data slate, and he did mention Void Raven Bombers as one unit that you probably should take a closer look at, because he assumed that people would realize that it's actually quite strong and would take it. I haven't seen many at the LGT, but maybe it's a grower, maybe people still need time. You are here to tell us that they actually do something, right?
Yeah, this shame sounds like a smart fella. Should invite him often. the reason why you don't see Void Raven Bombers particularly often is A, because nobody plays Dukaru except for like the diehard faction specialists. And B, you could play Inari, but like previously when you played Eldar, you had so many options. It was really confusing. Like, why play a Void Raven Bomber when you have 125 point fire prisons and release? Why bother? I think it's more interesting now. Kind of the problem with Inari is that you need to pay 100 points for a rain, which is the data sheet that really should be good, but it kind of isn't, and it's always awkward to include her, and she feels like a 100 point tax that you could also just use for something more useful. So that's kind of where Inari is in this weird spot. But if you can include a Void Riven Bomber, it's actually a really, really good data sheet. Pay attention. But the problem is, of course, that... So I didn't quite know the rules about aircraft. I will fully admit, because I don't think I've played a single game before against aircraft. So after some beers on day one, I was expecting to play against Peter Steiner's Dwarfs, Leagues of Votan, on the next turn. Mm-hmm. And I was scared. Then I woke up and saw later in the evening, like 3 a.m. I woke up and I just clicked on Tawny Keeper and I saw that he dropped. And the next one in the list was Drukhari with 3 Void Raven Bombers. And this is really the moment when you should be scared as an opponent. Because if someone just goes 3-0 with a weirder list, with a weirder faction that really shouldn't perform, then something's up. There's something fishy going on here.
Yep.
So, yeah, I just had to read the rules for aircraft. And I didn't know that they had to pivot before now, which is just a very interesting change. Mm-hmm. And it became super relevant here. Because as it turns out, when you have to tell your opponent where you will fly off and you have to move a minimum of 20, it becomes hilariously easy to just make them fly off the board. Mm-hmm. So I originally thought I had made a mistake, but no, that's actually they pivot before now. So that was great. But yeah, when you see 600 points of aircraft, the game plan is simply, you just kill everything that is not aircraft and prevent them from scoring. Even if I get tabled, if they have 2 good shooting phases, even if I get tabled, then they can't score, and what do I care? I don't get points for being alive. So that was the game plan. Basically, what happened was I killed everything that wasn't aircraft, and then I made him fly off the board. And that really was that. Because it's that simple. It's just a single Nurgling just beats an aircraft, it seems.
Yeah, absolutely. The Nurglings are like the MVPs of every list for them. You knows it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that was an 18-2, which is kind of what happens. He had some very good plays where I made a couple of mistakes not seeing cabarets from reserve striking fading while doing an action coming in. I kind of missed a couple of things like that. Just being slightly off-center for error denial. Stuff like that. So it wasn't a perfect game, but yeah, the strategy is just what you do against the aircraft. It's kind of like this type of list is really good at beating people that play against aircraft for the first time. Don't pay attention and underestimate Water Riven Bombers. Mm-hmm. Don't do that, kids. They're dangerous.
Yeah, so again, a unit that you probably shouldn't sleep on and research a little bit more.
You should make a video about this.
We could actually. So, I mean, we already did because James spoke about them, but we could go into a little bit more detail. Absolutely. So, yeah.
1.5 hours talking about Void Ravens. Yeah.
Exactly. Watch this space. It's going to happen one day. Right. So then you came to your final game, right? Against Fabian P and his Eldari. So, what a surprise.
Yeah. So, shockingly, it's round 5. You go 4-0. And what do you meet? Eldar. Turns out they're still pretty... Yeah. Which kind of is one of the peculiar pieces about this event was that everyone seemingly assumed that the tables were really open and they needed a lot of anti-tank. And all of the lists that I looked at, they're just really high on anti-tank guns. Like, I've never seen triple fire prison I haven't seen it in such a long time. But this event featured 50% of Eldari players just bringing triple fire prison? I was confused.
Yeah, but, because I'm looking at the list. So 2 night spinners, 3 fire prisms. That's not something you see frequently or have seen recently.
I mean, you do see night spinners every now and then.
Obviously, but not fire prisms and not 3 of them.
Yeah, I think there was the expectation that the terrain would be more open. I must have missed something. Like I talked to Fabian the week before, and he mentioned that that the event would be quite open in terms of terrain. So I guess everyone listened to him except for me.
one, was the tournament already playing the Space Marines codex?
No, it wasn't.
No, it wasn't, because I would expect that maybe trying to gear against like a host of dreadnoughts or something like that would explain it. But if they weren't bringing those, then and everyone knew about it, then it's just interesting.
Yeah, there is this tradition. There's a lot of Chaos Knights players. Like in the first event last year, I went 4-1, and that was first four rounds were all against Chaos Knights.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess there's something about that. I'm just not sure what it was. Anyway, everybody brought a lot of anti-tank guns, and I was glad I didn't bring Morty. So closing the circle, discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Battleground. And Battleground is really important because it's a mission that I love facing Elder players on, because it forces them to play the primary aggressively against me. Battleground is, it is an aggressive mission. You can't decide to just not play primary there and score later. It's just too punishing. And this was a nice configuration because I could hold objectives, sitting rhinos from behind wards.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful stuff. So this time around, I got a bit lucky and went first because I made a really silly mistake of not paying attention that he had a unit of Shardrunners, and I didn't pay attention and block them with Nurglings. I didn't want to sacrifice them turn one because I didn't know why. And had he gone first, that could have been a really close game because he could have move blocked me. And that's a problem. That is a problem when you're playing with Rhinos. It's game five. You kind of expect these. It's game five. It's game five Warhammer. It's not perfect. I don't know how people do it at like super majors where they're playing game eight and
or 11 games or something. Don't ask me. I wouldn't know.
It's a level of endurance that is far beyond me.
Yeah.
But anyway, basically the start of the turn was me putting Rhinos behind walls and waiting for my opponent to do stuff. He did stuff, namely that he moved the fireperson forward, killed the Rhino, teleported Incon forward.
There you go. Trap set, and now
exactly. Exactly. A horrible, horrible idea. Because what happened was death by grenades. And Typhus. Typhus actually hit something. It was a pretty hilarious. Yeah, it was a pretty hilarious one because after two grenades and Typhus, he was down to two wounds. But then it just proceeded to tank my entire shooting phase, just rolling 3+ and 4+ saves until I had nothing left.
Zero.
Then I had to jump. Yeah, and just an incon on one wound. Just, why do you do this to me, game? Why? So I had to try to break my unit in.
Mm-hmm.
Get a decent set of damage through, or like attack through, like seven wounds of something like that. Saves them all. Uses a reroll, just saves the last one. And then one little plague knife that could, just stabs him right in the toe and kills him because he rolls a one on the last dice.
Because it was a poisoned knife, so.
That was beautiful. I was never so happy. Never so happy about remembering to actually attack with plague knives. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
That put him into a really problematic situation because that kind of was the tool in this list. When you're running triple fire prison, you give up something, and that is about something like Wraveguard, for example, that can, in a pinch, go forward and actually hold the middle objective, for example.
Mm-hmm.
The game lot. He played a deny game using his units to objectives and denies. I kill the small units, and whatever he gives me, he shoots me with fire prisms. He doesn't kill me fast enough, and that's really the story of that game. It's just kind of he didn't have the tools to get the primary that he needed in order to win the game.
Okay, so Chaos Space Marines, Inari, Drukhari, Tyranids, and finally Eldari. How do you assess this? Was this what you were hoping for? Or you mentioned that the events, for example, have a lot of Chaos Knights. So do you think that you would have fared as well against Chaos Knights? Because I find it an uphill battle against, let's say, 12 Baby Knights. This is what Joker from Contact Lost also runs, and when we play on TTS, it's an uphill battle every single time. So do you think that had you met, any other foes at that tournament, it would have gone different?
I think Chaos Knight is actually a tricky one because you can't trade. Like, I can't play my normal game of here, let me just take this unit of, like, say there's a carnivore and an objective. You can't just put one Plague Mage squad into them. It's not going to do enough. So you have to at least start with two Plague Mage squads, probably need a CP for a grenade. And at that point, that's just not a good trade anymore. So you can't really play a trading game against them because you just don't have the reliability to deal with them. Your Mortars do very little in this matchup, so you can't really play a good passive game. So it comes down to the situation where what you want is this one big brawl where they go forward with five carnivores. They go forward, where you just force them into the situation. Where that makes it worthwhile to get all your plague marines out of the rhino, to get your termites in, to have the big turn of threat saturation. It's really like a two-phase game. On the first step, you just need to kill the carnivores. That's just something you have to deal with eventually. And the second part is you need to survive the return fire turn against the brigands. Which is a bit of a tall order. Brigands are
It
pretty
is.
efficient. They can whiff. So it's a bit of an awkward one for both sides, I feel like. Because if the brigands just don't have the good return, then you just retreat back behind your walls, and you can play more of a trading game against brigands. It's just very tricky as long as the carnivores are alive, because Knights of Shades is just such a problematic tool to play around. But I am scared of very well played Chaos Knights. The thing is that there's not that many top level players that bring Chaos Knights, because it's just traditionally just a list that runs into a bad matchup, and it's just hard to go consistently, I would say, 5-0. With Chaos Knights. But it's just a very frightening faction if they get the pacing correctly of just when to lose the carnivores, basically.
Okay, so again, coming back to your games, and the like assortment of factions that you faced, no small feat. Inari, Eldari, Tyranids, is that, as you mentioned, not a favorable matchup as well, because many lone ops and so on, you cannot really put your Plague Scrawlers into good targets. So yeah, really, really well done. So have you had any thoughts after this tournament about your list? Does it need any changes, or are you going to keep running this? Or yeah, what's the plan for future events?
Relatively minimal. Overall, I'm happy. It's just a couple of smaller things that I just learned about. Like the one unit that I was disappointed in is the Lord of Violence. It's I thought his ability would be more useful, but it just didn't come up much. Like he couldn't quite get the line of sight to the targets that I wanted to mortar. It was just too easy to screen him out, or he would have needed to land in the most awkward positions and just do nothing for the rest of the game. It's a good buff. It didn't find it was worthwhile. In the
Okay.
same way that Reroll Wound Rolls is nice for the Deathrad Tormentors, it just wasn't relevant. There just weren't enough targets where I needed the Deathrad Flamers to be relevant at all. What worked very well, by contrast, was the Lord of Corruption, which is a model that seemingly very few people run and like. I think it's vastly underestimated because it kind of pushes the output of death shards into a level where they just reliable damage dealers. I had too many games where I just put my death shards into a target and rolled 5 ones on the 12 attacks. And then it just not... they can... Like, when you have a melee unit gets into melee once and it needs to do the job at that point.
Absolutely.
Getting the Lord in there. It just adds that extra bit of punch and the reliability that I need to just, for example, take out a carnivore in this situation. Like, I know this unit will take out a carnivore, and it's extremely unlikely that anything bad happens in the meantime.
Mm-hmm. So what would you replace the Lord of Virulence with?
There's a couple of different options. There's, for example, the option to bring 2 Fire Blight Spawns, because they're very useful as single characters to, for example, get around Rhino Wars, where you drive your Rhino to your side of the wall, and you jump out a Fire Blight Spawn. So you have OC3 now, so your opponent, say a Chaos Space Marine player, can't just park a Rhino on the opposite side of the wall because he has one less OC than you. He has to actually take a unit of Chosen and charge a Fire Blight Spawn on a Rhino, which he really doesn't want to. So, plus they're also really useful just as an additional characters for either actions, screening, what have you, or just for the flamer. Like, I appreciate the flamer.
Yeah, or even 2. If you put them in the Rhino, you have a Rhino that spits fire, basically, with a firing deck.
Yeah. Or fight first is technically useful, but that kind of brings us to the next point. We're going to come to that in a second. The other option is that what I decided for the next 3 events that I'm attending is basic. Just get a second Lord of Corruption and keep it simple. Have Typhus is
Lord of Contagion.
Contagion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so many seasons.
Still, so many as eyes and Space Marines like intercessors, impulsors, characters, and so on. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, it's not this. Like, I do like my list to be simple. It's what kind of a dominate a lot of the list design for me is just keep the list simple and symmetrical. I think in the future it will definitely devolve a bit more where I bring a bit less of a spammy concept, but for now it's good. So getting a second Lord of Contagion is an option there, or you just bring a bit more utility squads like cultists, that could work. Whatever, you can kind of, it's like 100 points. It's side grading specific, this specific tool. The only other thing really were the weapons on Plague Marines, surprisingly. Because, you know, heavy plague weapons, they are mathematically better into basically everything, except for irrelevant things like guardsmen, infantry.
Yeah. Because cool. You still hit them on 4s.
But what they also do is they lull you. They deviously lull you into a false sense of security of treating Plague Marines as an actual melee unit. If I learned one thing very quickly, is that weapon skill 4 leads to some very swingy results.
Yeah.
This is kind of what happened to me a lot of the times. It's just I don't send my Plague Marines into a full health carnivore. I send them in when the carnivore has 1 or 2 wounds left and just hope to get that 1 wound through. I use melee for utility, for more mobility, getting somewhere. So what I'm really looking for when I'm attacking in melee with Plague Marines is just reliability. I just want to do that 1, 2, 3 wounds in there. And so I'm actually considering to swap back to just being the humble robotic weapon. The one nobody brings for good reason, because the other is mathematically superior in every way except for guardsmen.
Yeah. But so it's also strength 5, yeah. 82 damage 1, but weapon skill 3.
Yeah. 12 attacks. Yeah. 12 attacks, strength 5. It's, it just, I'm so desperate at this point to just get that reliability to take that last wound. There were too many traumatic experiences in the recent past. Where the 9 attacks on weapon skill 4, they kind of might just have all missed. So,
I know what you mean, because I've been in that place so many times with my roles. So, I get you.
Yeah, which is primarily the reason why I just don't like the big units. Like, if I'm looking at melee damage output, I'm looking at Terminators. Both Terminator variants are just better. Plague Marines have good support characters, but what they really need is a lot of contagion to give them reroll hit rolls. Mm-hmm. But for now, they just have a lord with reroll ones for whatever reason. So here we are. But that's really it for like bigger changes in the list. Everything else just did what it had to do. The only thing is that the list is quite a bit exhausting to play when it comes to clock time, because we have all of these small activations that you need to utilize in order to get the damage in. Mm-hmm. Like it's an MSU list. You can't just not do something with a unit. You need them all to come together. You need those activations. And because Games Workshop has this bullet design where they just give data sheets according to what is in the box, in order to do damage with Death Guard, you have to use a lot of special weapons. And it does really eat into your clock time when you have to roll a Plague Spear, for example, which is a really good weapon. But it's D6 shots, and you ask for toughness. The opponent tells you toughness. You roll to wound. You tell them 3 wounds at AP 1, 1 damage. How many wounds? 3 wounds. What's the AP? AP 1. I failed 2. It's damage 1, right? You have these conversations. It's not just rolling dice. For each special weapon, you just have to at least explain 5 times what the special weapon does. So I was very careful during the preparation to just not add too many. Like, yes, technically it is an increase, and you should always include the Plague Spear at least in the unit that does not include the Biologus, because it's a flat increase to your damage. You should always do it. But you should also be prepared that it probably costs you like five or more minutes of your time just rolling Plague Spear shots. If you have the time, great. I'm trying 3 in the future. For the next event, I'm feeling confident. I'm bringing 3 Plague Spears. We'll see how much time they cost me. But it's really exhausting just to have all of these small special weapons.
Mm-hmm. I know. Yeah. I have the same with like running plague with crawlers with spitters. It's exactly the same thing. So. Yeah, I know. I know pretty well where you're coming from. Okay, I think we know everything. I think you summed it up pretty well. The matchups were great. The changes to the list, we also understand them now. So before we finish, where can people find you? You did mention that you run a blog. I have read the blog and I loved it. Tell us more about it.
The Strategic Owl. Basically, what I'm focusing on, typically, when I'm not just talking about Death Guard right now, is that I'd like to focus on generous content, but I like to think of as timeless content, like deployment, like approaching games, building a game plan, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You can find it most easily by clicking on the link in the show notes. That I'm sure will be there.
Yeah, well, I will put the link there, because it's as I said, I was impressed by it. I loved it. I even reached out to you because I was so inspired after reading it to just reach out and say thank you for the content, because it's really high value and it's very approachable. So I recommend it strongly to everyone. Just go visit that site, bookmark it, wait for another article, and the articles will really help you develop as a gamer. I'm quite sure about it. So yeah, a great place to be, a great place to have in your bookmark section.
Wonderful, thanks.
Yeah. All right. To do all our listeners, I strongly encourage you that you follow Max, that you follow his website, but you also check out the Tryhard TTS League. From what I have seen today, there's going to be a Teams event TTS League as well on Tryhard. So definitely something to check out with your friends if you are into that kind of stuff. And also check out our social media. So check out Contact Lost Facebook, because as I said, we are doing the daily posts. I think it's Myson Monday, where Myson, another member of, well, the most recognized member of Contact Lost, does post about his games and some hints on what he's using right now, etc., and how to use units. Then we have Tournament Tuesdays, so summaries of events that our friends or that, well, some events that took place, and you can read that drinking your morning coffee. It's a, like a 10-minute read. Then I can't remember what happens on Wednesdays. I think it's Paint or Die with Vitalis, because, and I'll use this space to thank the Army Painter, another sponsor of ours, for providing us with a wonderful mega set of speed paints that Vitalis is going to now put on camera, and you'll see how he paints models with that wonderful set. So thank you to Army Painter for that. And then on Thursdays, we have the Thoughtful Thursday. As I mentioned, we talk about different kinds of disabilities, neurodiversity, and so on, and other aspects of the hobby that you probably know about, but you easily forget. So we will try to bring them into spotlight again so that you can remember about them during events. There's also much more stuff that is coming out with our masterclasses. We just released one with Innes for Tyranids. So do check our Patreon as well, because patrons get early access to our masterclasses. And along with the masterclasses come Contact Lost merch that we strongly recommend using. And again, as mentioned, do not forget about our newest sponsor, Weyland Yutani. There is a link in the description, affiliation link. If you click on that, Weyland Yutani gives you a 5% discount, and we get a little bit from that that contributes to our development. So it will help us buy new gear, and it will help us to develop the podcast even more if you like what we do. Max, I thank you very much. I have stolen enough time from you right now, so I guess we will wrap this up. And I wish you luck in your future tournaments, in your TTS leagues, and hopefully with Death Guard. So thanks a lot.
Thank you. It was an absolute pleasure being here.
Yeah, I'm sure we will invite you again after your next success. So looking forward to that already. Okay. And to everyone else, until next time. Bye-bye.